so many issues to talk about with this man. He covers the Eagles for ESPN.com. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline, and his name is Tim McManus. Tim, how you doing today, buddy?
Mike, I'm doing all right, but it's May, and there's like 10 issues to tackle.
There really are. So let's get into them. Obviously, the most current one is the national issue and what the NFL owners did through Roger Goodell today, the statement on the national anthem policy. Have you had a chance to talk to any of these players to see what their initial reaction is to this?
We don't have player availability today, so haven't had a chance to speak with the players, but we know that Philadelphia essentially has become the social activism hub in a lot of ways, with the leadership of Malcolm Jenkins and the Players Coalition, along with Chris Long, Torrey Smith when he was here, and Michael Bennett is big in that, and he's now in the fold in Philadelphia. And so it's really, this is going to be, you know, one of the main, you know, areas of concentration in which there's going to be reaction, and, you know, there's going to be continued social activism here. I mean, my initial impression is that it seems like the NFL just guaranteed that there's going to be at least another year of talk about this, if not controversy. I mean, my feeling was the protests itself were starting to dissipate a little bit prior to games on Sundays. And that is in part because of the actions of Malcolm Jenkins forming the Players Coalition. The NFL dedicated $90 million for purposes that players care about, and kind of part of that was, well, how do you feel about, you know, stopping protesting in the meanwhile? And a lot of the players that are active on these fronts were kind of on board with that. There were some that were continuing with the protests, but I had the sense that it was kind of fading a little bit. And now when you put rules in place, it creates a situation where it's some will view, I would imagine, as a challenge. Where,
yeah,
you're telling me I can't do this, and how do I react?
Yeah, I pretty much feel the same way. I asked the rhetorical question earlier. What is the point of the league creating a hotter button issue? They've intensified the button now. It's redder by doing this kind of thing, because you know what's going to happen. On one side, there are people that say, this is righteous. It's in line with patriotism as mandated by the president, honoring the veterans, a whole bit. But the other side of it is, it's a unilateral anti-minority policy, which could be interpreted as another example of keeping the man down, the man keeping us down.
And I'm not pretending like it's an easy thing for the NFL to deal with either. I mean, I don't think that there's a great solution because it's so politicized. Because there's opinions that are that contrast so sharply, it's tough to come to a proper resolution. So I'm not saying it's an easy road to navigate for them, but now it's ultra politicized because you have the Vice President of the United States chiming in with a hashtag winning as a result of what just came down. And so you know that Trump is going to run with it, and you know that both sides are going to dig in even further. And I would also, you know, say that maybe you wanted to involve the players a little bit more, or at least the NFL Players Association, as you're forming, you know, this new set of rules, because apparently they weren't a part of the process.
And they've got their backup about that, obviously, with their statement. Do you have any kind of accounting, unofficial accounting, of who voted for this and who did not? Because I think people want to know whether Lori voted against it.
Well, so the NFL framed it as unanimous. However, it has come out since that the San Francisco 49ers owner abstained. So there's at least one owner that just decided not to take part of it, and there's a chance that there's more. And if there, and I don't have the reporting on this done yet, and I'll certainly, you know, seek it out. But, you know, Jeffrey Lurie has been very much liberal, I think, on this view, and it wouldn't surprise me if he also abstained, but I'm still seeking that out. But you know, I think the framing of it being unanimous comes with a caveat that at least one owner abstained from it.
Okay. I assume we'll get some more facts, and then that'll leak out. All right, so you know, again, this issue now is hotter, and I can't imagine, like, smart people in the NFL, when they're discussing this, would not think that this was going to, they're making it a hotter issue, and how that benefits the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that really all of last year and the year prior was, a major area of focus and trying best how to deal with it. And sometimes, and we'll see how it plays out. I mean, maybe it works out for them, but, you know, at least based off of the initial reaction, and if you kind of play it out about what it, you know, how players might react to it, you set yourself up potentially for a situation where you extend the issue as opposed to just kind of letting it play its course.
Yeah, I totally agree there. All right, let's get to the false thing. And it was reported, I guess it was an NFL.com report about the Eagles actually turning down a Cleveland offer of the 35th pick in the draft. And in doing so, they consulted Nick Foles about it and adhered to his wishes that he didn't want to go to Cleveland. And on top of that, they gave him a raise for it. Can you sift through this thing and tell me what's true and how this could happen?
Well, a couple things here. So, number one, my reporting has not gotten that far as it applies to Nick Foles and the Browns. You know, I was told that the Browns inquired, but I never got to the point where I was told that there was a number 35 overall was offered and rejected, and Nick Foles was part of the conversation. That doesn't mean that the reporting that's come out is wrong. It just means that my own personal reporting, I can't corroborate it. Okay, so that's as far as I've gotten with it. Assuming that report is true, I think we have to peel back and recognize that the Eagles being portrayed as, well, they wanted to do right by Nick. I mean, there's a couple different factors here. I think that they want to be loyal to Foles. And I think that they, you know, obviously they owe him a debt of gratitude for leading them to the first ever Lombardi Trophy. But there's also the fact that the quarterback would have to be on board with a potential trade in theory, because if a team's going to be giving up a high pick, in this case, the number 35 overall, you would think they would also be interested in extending the player. And in order to extend the player, the player's got to want to, you know, extend back. So if it did get to that point, you know, it might not have just been, we're going to do Foles a solid, but also, you know, recognizing that Foles was a key cog in this and that he could essentially nix a trade, assuming that the inquiring team wanted him long term, if he didn't want to be there.
Well, okay. I this debt of gratitude thing, it's like the irresistible force and the immovable object. It's like debt of gratitude versus improving your team. If they, in fact, were offered the 35th pick, is that bad business when they turned it down?
Well, I would say that at that time, they didn't know for sure what Wentz's trajectory would be, or at least they weren't as confident or couldn't be as confident as they would be now. I mean, you see him on the field, it's like, all right, this guy looks like he's on the mend. But as opposed to at that time where he wasn't quite at that stage. And also, I would say that the draft in itself wasn't that strong. At least that's how a lot of people were looking at it. You saw the Eagles trade out of the number 32 overall spot and drop down to lower in the second. I think that speaks to how they viewed it overall. But you can certainly make the case that, you know, a high second round pick, Foles is going to be a backup, Wentz is your franchise quarterback, and you can get better for it. But for the different factors that were lining up, I think there was a case on the other side as well.
All right. Can you make sense of the Kendricks release? Now, is this just a matter of bad timing that Orlow, they decided to cut Kendricks before Orlow gets hurt? Or is this clearly what they wanted to do with Kendricks and relieve themselves of this money and get a little cap space?
I think that the writing was on the wall for Kendricks. I mean, it seemed pretty clear that the Eagles weren't going to be going into the season with Kendricks in the fold. He's due to make close to $8 million, over $8 million next year. They usually roll with two linebackers, and because they're in sub packages 70% of the time, Kendricks costs a lot of money, and clearly Jim Schwartz hasn't had a full endorsement of him based on his actions over the course of the first 2 years. Kendricks only got a lot of playing time last year as a result of Jordan Hicks getting injured, essentially. So the writing was on the wall, but I don't think that the timing was ideal for them, because the facts are that, you know, Les Bowen saw Kendricks leaving the practice facility in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, the Eagles take the field for the first OTA and Warlow goes down. And so I think that the Kendricks cut happened before the Warlow injury. And that makes even more sense when you consider the optics. Would the Eagles really want to, after learning about Warlow, double down on that and say, yeah, we're releasing Kendricks now too?
So they would probably kept Kendricks.
Anything, ultimately, yeah. But I think that the sequence that makes the most sense is Kendricks cut, Warlow hurt, and that leaves them, you know, obviously more bare in the linebacker department than they were heading into yesterday.
Yeah, and they probably have to add one. Last question is on Sidney Jones, because I'm reading some reports that they were experimenting with him in a nickel and as a slot corner. And I don't know what that means, because we had heard that Jalen Mills would probably assume that slot. Are they more comfortable with Sidney Jones in that spot than Jalen Mills?
I would say this. I think it's interesting, because I wasn't anticipating that being the first look based off of what Doug Peterson had told us in March, that the first name that he spoke about was Jalen Mills going into the slot, and he didn't mention Sidney Jones. And for Jones to be the first guy in there, I thought was at least interesting. And, you know, based off of what we could see on the field yesterday, Jones looks really good. I mean, he is quick. I mean, he is like elite fast, and just looks different than a lot of other athletes look out there on the football field. So I think that's encouraging. Whether he ultimately gets that job is to be determined. I mean, there was a multitude of different looks that the Eagles rolled with last year trying to figure out how they were going to deploy their cornerbacks. And it wasn't until Darby got here via trade that Robinson moved into the slot, and boom, you had your formula. And so I think that they're going to try a bunch of different guys in there and see how it works out. But, you know, as based off at least of what we saw on day one, Jones is going to be in that conversation.
Okay. Sounds good. Timmy, good stuff. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yes. Tim McManus, covering the Eagles for ESPN.com.